You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702. Bongani's on Twitter.
At Bongles.
All right, it's just after 4:15, and as we do every week, we look at the week that was and review the week's big stories. And I'm happy to say, joining us now on the line is editor at News 24, Adrian Basson. Good afternoon to you, and thank you for your time. Adrian, I suppose because I have you, we have to start with the BLF versus SANEF action. Talk to me about that.
Hello, Bongani, and congratulations on your new show. It's lovely to hear you on the radio. Well,
thank you very much.
It's so nice to be on your show. I hope we can do it much more. Bongani, yes, Black First, Land First, these guys who have become our nemesis as journalists, tried to disrupt another gathering of journalists. This is after they disrupted a Gupta Leaks function that Amma Bongani hosted in Johannesburg last week. This week they came to Cape Town to try and disrupt the gathering, the Daily Maverick and Eyewitness News' function yesterday. But fortunately this time we were prepared. There were security, there were police, and they were not allowed inside the conference venue in Cape Town. But BLF is, of course, still threatening journalists, intimidating journalists. There was also an incident at the Cape Town airport where a journalist from Amma Bongani recorded them. And they then proceeded to smack the journalist, assault the journalist, and remove his phone. So, you know, as SANEF and journalists who are threatened by them, we are continuing with court cases, pushing for them to actually be arrested. We have ever asked the court to suspend that sentence.
The other big story of the week, of course, was Lynn Brown and her PA being featured in the Gupta Leaks.
Absolutely, Bongani. You would know that a lot of ministers involved in SOEs have been implicated in the Gupta Leaks. But Lynn Brown is the one minister which we haven't been able to tie directly. She still has not been directly linked to the Gupta family, but a lot of people around her has been. And one of the amazing stories that we have published this week in collaboration with Amma Bongani and Daily Maverick, and this is now News 24, was about Lynn Brown and her links to the Guptas through her personal assistant, Kim Davids. The next day, Lynn Brown asked Kim Davids to resign. And this is after we revealed that Davids, in fact, lied about paying herself for a trip to Dubai, where she stayed over in the Oberoi Hotel, and that the Gupta family indeed paid for her. What is still unclear, Bongani, is to what extent Kim Davids influenced Lynn Brown's thinking or even decision-making in appointing specifically board members of state-owned enterprises. But yes, another victim of the Gupta Leaks.
Yes, but she herself won't resign, of course. That would be too much to expect. And of course, the leader of the EFF, Julius Malema, in some trouble for a comment he made about Indians in KZN.
Yes, controversial as always. Julius Malema at the fourth birthday party of the Economic Freedom Fighters said that Indian people must respect Africans, that they are ill-treating them, and quote Malema, worse than Afrikaners will do. And this has unleashed a massive reaction against Malema. A lot of Indian people and other South Africans blaming Malema, criticizing him, saying that this was racist. Malema and the EFF refusing to apologize, defending their claims. And one of the people who have kind of risen from the dead to criticize Malema is Shabir Sheikh, who's also said that Malema was a misinformed fool. And then a lot of people actually trying to make sense of it and say, look, a lot of Indian people have treated their workers very badly in the past, have been racist towards Africans, and that this is the issue we should be debating. But Malema always in the news.
All right, Adrian Basson, editor at News 24. Thank you for that review of the big stories of the week.
702
with Bongani Bingwa.
Email him
on bongani@702.co.za.
Now, it's been a year since the Democratic Alliance took control of three key metros, Johannesburg, Tshwane, and Nelson Mandela Bay. And perhaps a few people know the inner workings of the party better than our next guest, political analyst Gareth van Onselen. Thank you for your time as we, I suppose, give the DA a report card for the last year. Overall, what's your score for them?
Thanks, first of all, Bongani, for having me on. I'm quite hesitant to give a score out of 10 because I don't think it's a good idea to quantify things that are this subjective. But the DA has done well given the limited amount of time it has. I think it is, you've basically got three big goals when you get a local government metro. The one is to stabilize the administration The second one is to clean out what obvious corruption and maladministration preceded you. And the third one is to get your finances right. And I think on those three fronts, the DA has managed to do that, or is in the process of being quite far down that track. And that speaks well to it.
It's obviously important for the party to make a success out of managing these metros and to demonstrate, I suppose, that it can govern successfully before 2019.
Yes, I think it's critical for the DA, not only that it is able to obviously fix these administrations in the public interest, which is its primary objective, but politically, it needs to be able to demonstrate to voters, primarily in Gauteng, which is going to definitely be on the table in 2019, that where it governs, people can experience a tangible change. And a lot of that boils down to communicating the difference you make, which is why I think you're seeing a lot of these kind of press conferences where the DA is setting out the difference that it's making to try and convince people that it is the alternative to the ANC.
What are some of the obstacles it faces, though? Because coalition politics at the best of times is a challenge.
Yes, coalition politics is a very tricky business. And obviously, the more complicated your coalition, the more partners you have, the more difficult it is to get your agenda agreed to. And in almost all three cases of the new metro governments that the DA has inherited, it has quite complex coalitions. And you see in Nelson Mandela Bay, for example, there's a lot of conflict around the deputy mayor, against whom a motion of no confidence is going to be brought next week. But these are on the margins. I think by and large, the DA has managed to keep those people that are on board its coalition on board, keep them happy and keep them focused on the DA's delivery agenda and make them feel they have ownership of it too.
You've written often quite critically of the DA's managing of its brand. How are they doing overall? I mean, is their message convincing, or are most voters still seeing them as a party of the past?
Well, you have to disaggregate two things. The one is the brand of DA governments. So, for example, the Johannesburg Metro government will have a brand of its own and a message about how it wants to go about delivering, likewise, Nelson Mandela Bay and Shwane. The DA as a party overall uses good governance as a central mechanism of its brand. And the problem it has is that outside of that brand, it has been fairly limited. It hasn't had much to offer in terms of national policies. Musi Maimane has yet to deliver a new set of policy platforms to underpin his leadership. And it has been distracted by a whole lot of other issues, racial controversies, and so on and so forth. And so it has relied very heavily on good governance in order to drive its brand. And the problem it has is how it's going to translate that into a national agenda come 2019.
All right, Gareth van Onselen, political analyst from Cape Town. Thank you for your perspective on the year of the DA running those key metros in Tshwane, Johannesburg, and Nelson Mandela Bay. What are your thoughts? I mean, are you convinced that good governance, which is the central message of the DA, as Gareth van Onselen says, that's more important than issues of identity, which so many people find a weakness in terms of how the party handles?